Welcome to Forests, Fire and Futures, a new podcast from the School of Forestry at Northern Arizona University. I'm Executive Director Dave Orty. In this podcast series, we're going to share details about our courses, the latest research and technical developments in natural resource stewardship, and the student experience in forestry at NAU. From AI to ancient DNA, in this episode, we learn how groundbreaking technology is transforming forestry practices and shaping the future of our forests.
Recent developments like ChatGPT and large language models have kind of pushed AI out in front of people, but forestry has a long history of working with AI.
Genetic tools are a great way to learn about wildlife, and they can answer questions that are really difficult to answer any other way.
Forestry meets the future. Cutting-edge tech in action.
My name is Andrew Sanchez-Metter. I am a professor of forest biometrics and quantitative ecology in the School of Forestry. I'm also the executive director for the Ecological Restoration Institute. When a lot of people think about forestry, they think they're going to be in the woods, measuring trees, kind of experiencing nature. But if you're a gamer, if that is your interest and those are things that light a fire under you, then there is a place in forestry for you because that type of work exists. And it's important. If you kind of take a step back and look at it, forestry is a field that's relied heavily on predictive models to assess how forests change over time, how trees grow, where animals move to. And so those predictive models, some of them have a history in AI. The forests tend to be in remote locations, so we end up having to use remote sensing, and remote sensing and AI have a long history together. As the field progresses, as memory becomes cheaper and computing power becomes cheaper, what we're seeing is mainstream AI is making its way into forestry and kind of expanding our basis there. For example, heuristics, which are kind of a form of AI or machine learning approach where someone develops a model that tries to mimic human decision space or come to the right conclusion, but we don't really know how it comes to that conclusion. It just gives us the right conclusion. Heuristics have been used in forestry probably for 30 or 40 years to optimize road networks or harvesting methods. We've used neural networks and kind of predictive AI approaches to model tree growth, tree mortality, stand dynamics, disturbances. That's been used and kind of well applied really heavily in the past 20 years.
I'm Faith Walker. I'm an associate research professor at the School of Forestry. I direct the Ancient DNA Lab. There was a need at NAU to have an ancient DNA facility for these projects that were working with ancient or historical samples and reduce the risk of contamination with modern DNA, and that's what ancient DNA labs are for. We undergo all these quality control procedures to keep the DNA from being contaminated with modern DNA. We have a set of rooms that are under positive pressure, so they're pushing the air out, where we can work in our containment suits. So we wear these Tyvek suits and masks and goggles, and we're trying to keep our DNA off our samples. The range of DNA samples that we work with include ancient DNA or historical DNA. Those could be museum samples. The types of things include bones and feces. So we have bones from ancient bats that are actually up to 40,000 years old. We also have bones from an ancient bison that's about 13,000 years old, and feces from mammoths and ancient bison. People mail us packages of bat guano and other guano. We now like to say that we study anything that poops. We extract DNA from all these sample types and sequence it.
Forests are kind of often located in places that are hard to get to. And so remote sensing is often used in forestry, and then being able to train supervised models where you train the model to predict what you want it to predict, or unsupervised models where you give it some parameters and it predicts and kind of figures out what the answers are. Those have been used in forestry for a long time, and they continue to be used. So that's kind of the background of types of AI that exist in forestry. I think where it's going, what I anticipate is we'll probably move from weak to strong AI, or like narrow to wide AI. The idea that, you know, right now, most AI that's out there that we interact with in forestry and kind of as people is considered weak or narrow AI, where it can't learn outside of the information you give it. It's not cognizant. It's not sentient. It doesn't learn and develop on its own like, you know, the Terminator TV series. It's confined. And so that works for us a lot. I think what we'll see and what we are seeing is those models are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and better and better and better, and they make better and better predictions. And then meanwhile, you know, these other forms of AI are developing. I would anticipate that we'll see that traditional methods like regression will pretty much be replaced with probably artificial intelligence methods like random forest, which is a machine learning approach. And then we'll start to see the wider, kind of more advanced AI, where the system can learn and develop itself. As that makes its way kind of into mainstream society, we'll start to see that make its way into the field.
We have a program called Species from Feces, where we identified this primer set, this genetic marker that's really good at determining bat species from guano. We have people from all over the world sending us bat guano, and we can determine from that what species those guano pellets are from, or what diseases they have, or what they were eating. I'm working on a rabies project, and we found that we can detect it from feces, which is kind of a big deal. Up till now, in order to detect rabies, you need the brain stem, and so it's fairly invasive, right? You have to kill the animal to see if it has rabies. So we collected guano from bats that had died of rabies. So we took it out of their intestines and we set it in the lab for various time periods and determined that we could detect rabies up to 72 hours of them sitting out at room temperature, which suggests that we can go out in the field and collect guano, say put a tarp out at a roost and they poop on the tarp and we collect those fecal samples and can detect rabies up to 72 hours later. And we're looking in particular in southern Arizona. We want to characterize the prevalence of rabies and how it's spreading around, how it's moving on the landscape before the common vampire bat comes over the border into Arizona, because it's expected to do so with climate change. And once the vampire bat comes, because they can carry rabies, and so it may become more prevalent.
The majority of my research tends to focus on the applications of LIDAR, light distance and ranging, which is like sonar, but instead of sound, it's lasers or light, to quantify forest structure and forest condition. A chunk of my research lies in how we take that data and either use it to better understand the things that we would normally quantify, like if we were to go out and measure surface fuels or the amount of fuel that's available for a fire to burn on the surface, we would normally go out with tapes and measurement devices and we would measure the amount of fuel. Well, now we can go out with a LIDAR unit, set it up and scan, and then that LIDAR unit will give us some of that information, and we can do that probably more quickly and more efficiently using those methods. That inherently requires there to be algorithms developed to translate that data into usable data. So a lot of algorithm work is what I work on, a lot of application of machine learning techniques like random forest, which is a regression tree, AI, machine learning approach to make better predictions. We also work quite a bit in neural networks, so artificial neural networks or convolutional neural networks, which are a strict narrow AI approach that allows us to be able to almost data mine and explore some space to get really good prediction methods. With LIDAR data, you know, when the laser comes out of the plane and it hits something and it goes back, it builds what we call a point cloud. And so you just have a point cloud of dots that you know hit something, kind of like sonar or radar. But there's no color, there's no species, there's no other information associated with that. And so what we're doing is building multi-look neural networks where the neural network is fed information that is looking at the point cloud from different directions. Well, if you think about it, that's kind of how we look at a tree to tell what species it is. And so we're training neural networks to look at the LiDAR data and identify the species of the tree to then pair that species information with the structural information that then tells us what species it is, how big it is, where it is, and those types of things. Once we use that information to get the species, we pair that species data with the structural data. And then we go to the field and ground truth it in order to make sure that it's actually what it is. And then we use that information to also kind of quantify the error, the accuracy associated with the predictive technique.
Our exploration of airborne DNA, and this is a very recent thing, we're actually pulling DNA out of the air. DNA is everywhere. We can use these filters and suck air through the filters. The DNA is then present on the filters. We extract DNA from those filters, and we can determine what species are present. So that's a very exciting and growing area of research. We're kind of feeling out the limitations of it. It's a cutting-edge field right now, and it's going to go far. In the U.S., we have 3 nectar-feeding bats that come up from Mexico, and they are in Texas for a small amount of time in the summer. And there's no way to really know where they are. They follow these migration routes that go from nectar site to nectar site. So they're following this nectar corridor. And we want to be able to identify where those corridors are. So we teamed up with Bat Conservation International, and we developed this qPCR assay. So it's a genetic assay that can detect any of the 3 species. And we successfully applied it. So we swabbed the flowers of agave, the plant that they most often feed from. And we were able to, with high probability, detect them from these agave flowers. So it's a really great tool for Bat Conservation International to use to locate these nectar corridors going forward.
The term biometrician or biometrics comes from the phrase biometry, which is the application of statistics to biological data. Whatever your ecological question is, I'm actually interested in it from the quantifying and the numerical and mathematical end of it. So, you know, how do we build models? If little things grow slowly and big things grow fast, then, you know, that's a mathematical model that we can use. If you go out and collect data, that's a sample, and that has sampling theory and kind of mathematics behind it. AI, one of the biggest things that it can possibly bring to forestry and natural resource management and ecology and biological fields is the ability to, given enough information, given enough parameters, given enough guidance, it can find the right answer. And by right answer, I mean what we think is the right answer. I think as human beings, what we have to be comfortable with is sometimes you have to be able to delegate a bit of that responsibility to the AI, and in doing so, delegate your need to know how you got to the right answer away. And a lot of people feel really uncomfortable with that. But when you do a Google search and it gives you the website that you wanted right off the bat, you don't really question how it got to it. And so I think AI being efficient, allowing us to focus our efforts elsewhere and getting us the right answer is probably going to be the biggest contribution that it gives us in the next, you know, few decades.
We have world-class equipment and knowledge at the School of Forestry and also at the Pathogen and Microbiome Institute and also our sister lab at TGen. So it's just unlimited what students can do. My team is working on such diverse projects that they're making all kinds of really interesting discoveries and just running through the halls shouting about it. They're so excited. If students are dedicated and they're very meticulous and they think they can spend a lot of time in the lab and be excited about lab work, then there's probably a fit for them here. The career opportunities when you have this kind of expertise are going into genetic research, and that could be academically or it could be in industry, could be in forensics. It's a very good job market for students in genetics.
If you're into AI, if you like sitting in front of a computer, crunching numbers or writing code, focusing on solving a problem, that's kind of what quantitative ecology and forest biometrics brings to the field of forestry. therapy. It's a field that people tend to not think about as part of forestry, but I think has very large appeal to a growing sector. It provides good job security and opportunities for people to grow and stake a claim on the field.
There's definitely the tedious aspects of research, but the neat thing about being at the bench is that you're the first one to learn the answer. You're the first one to make that discovery. And there's nothing like being the first one to know something. That feeling is amazing.